I'm Mark Phillips. I've been running the Embedded Mini Conference for the last couple of years. I'm basically an embedded programmer, and I really wish that a lot of the chips that I work on and do ports for and things like that were as simple as that one that Ben was talking about. The thing that got me fascinated about that stuff is the fact that he actually could reverse engineer some of these things, which I'm going to have a definite talk to him about how he did that for some of them. Trying to actually determine where the registers are in some chips is near impossible. And the other thing you talked about with the actual tool chains, it's not so much that it's hard to build the tool chains. What it is it's hard to get the tool chains right for your specific application. Because there's so many different processors out there in CPUs, a lot of the tool chains are actually built with a very specific CPU in mind. So if you move to one that's slightly different, then usually there's little ES sequences between the two, which you've actually got to mesh out before you can actually get your tool chain to work. So if you can actually grab one that you know works for your chip, then you're better off doing that than actually building one from scratch. And this also flows over into UC Linux as well. Because there's so many different processors that can actually be built using UC Linux, the same sort of thing happens. Someone might go in with an ARM chip and make some changes in the whole set of files just to make it actually more compatible with whatever the current standard is or whatever the most recent standard is. But no one has actually gone back and upgraded all the other different processor types you can actually build through Micro C Linux. So when you come back to yours again with a new version, then you find that a lot of time you're sitting down there is actually going through and working out who was the last person that actually did something somewhere and then updating yours so it actually matches again with everything else that's in the flow. So yeah, it's not easy just taking chips as they come out and actually just saying, hey, this is going to work first go. The fact that he actually got that up and running, even with his really extremely fast typing, in a couple of hours, that was pretty good. That's damn good. And that's why I wouldn't mind if all chips were like that. Anyway, I'm here to talk about open hardware. Okay? The Wikipedia definition for open hardware is hardware designed in the same fashion as free and open source software. Yeah, but there's actual physical things here, not the actual IP that you can actually put into software. So there is a bit of a difference. This came about because Tim Ansell and myself proposed an open hardware mini conference this year. Right? So the two of us actually decided to put in three mini conference proposals. And we kind of figured that we'd do two together on one day and then we'd both do the open hardware on the third day. Thankfully, after looking at what happened with this year's, the third one got rejected. And I'm only thankful because this one was a lot more work than any other one that I've actually worked on. We've already seen some of the stuff that actually is part of what could be classed as open hardware. You got the RepRap. Vic, I gather, is actually giving another talk about this towards the end of the week. Okay, this is his Replication Rapid Prototyper. This is that little thing where he's actually building a machine that can build itself. Okay, so all the cogs that are into it that actually can like go off and actually be built, all the bits and pieces that can actually be used, the project is to get to the point where that machine can actually build a duplicate of itself, which can then be given to someone else, and then that one can be used to duplicate another one. And so the elm flow starts happening. Right? In the current blurb on his webpage, it actually says it can do small gears, cogs, fittings in plastic, ceramic, or metal. When I go to his talk, I'm actually going to find out if he can really do it in ceramic or metal. Because I've actually seen it being done in plastic, but not the other two. Right? And at the moment, it currently produces 40% of itself. And that 40% is all the plastic fittings, but it's got metal screws in it. So that's why I'm a bit dubious about whether he's actually got the metal in there or not, or he's actually bought off-the-shelf screws to put in it. Okay, but this is the sort of thing when we start talking about open hardware, right? Something that we can actually build physically, that we can give to someone else who can then go off and build another one, and so on and so on and so on. So you can give these to people who have got no other experience or no other manufacturing clout to actually go off and start building simple things. This machine can build itself, which means it builds the cogs and gears and stuff inside itself, which means you can adapt it to build cogs and gears to build something else. And so you've got the basis here of a spreading out of hardware so that anyone can go off and actually build some of this stuff. So you can actually build little pulley systems for what you need in your own area. You can actually go off and build bits and pieces that allow maybe a windmill to actually start generating the beginning of wind-powered systems so that you can actually get a power into your OLPC so that you don't have to sit there with a hand crank all the time. I mean, this is starting to look at the ways that you can actually get some of this stuff really out there. It only builds the components. I think you have to physically do the assembly yourself. But we're getting there. I got something else to talk about when we get a bit further about the robot stuff this morning and other bits and pieces too that happened a couple of years ago. But that'll be good. Okay, last year we had the Open Segway. Okay, again, this was some guy who went off and said, hey, I can do one of these, and went off and actually built one. Then he plastered the plans all over the net, so you can actually go off and build one yourself now. Right? He built it based on the wheels that you get out of a wheelchair, the battery with gears and wheels that you get out of a wheelchair. Right? So you can go off, get yourself an old secondhand wheelchair, and build yourself your own Segway. The stuff's there for you to actually go off and do this yourself. New radio. A couple of years ago, Bedell came around and actually showed us, with using a simple D to A and A to D converters, that he could actually listen to Triple J on his computer in the studio. All right, so he actually set it all up so that he actually read the data in from an A to D converter, did all sorts of manipulation from it, put it through a couple of filters, and bang, we were actually listening to music. It sounded like crap, but it was there, and it was a beginning system. All right, the problem is that A to D converters are pretty damn slow. Right, so you need to still do that phasing in between the bass bands and what you actually can actually manipulate with the A to D to converter. Right, but again, it's getting to the point where a handful of components can actually do something on a PC that years ago it would have been something that, you know, you would have had to get a bit of electronics for, excluding crystal sets. Okay, we'll leave crystal sets out of this one. Also, I think he's actually talking about rockets here this time, which is probably going to be another good one. When we actually start looking at what we can do with hardware that actually is out there at the moment, we can start getting our hands on things like simple little PIC chips. Right? They're nothing more than very, very simple little processors that do a little bit of I.O. Okay, these are something you can actually start and get very cheaply to actually start looking at what you can do with your own embedded systems, or start getting an ability to put your own embedded system together. Right? It's an environment that you can go off and play with. It's damn cheap to actually get started in it. And we now have most of the tools around there that are open source tools to allow you to get in there. You've got the new PIC project, and you've got SDCC, Small Device C Compiler, I think it's called. Have I got it written down? Ah, yes. Small Device C Compiler. Right, again, this is another C compiler that you can go off and use for the low-level 8-bit chips, 8051, Z80s. It's not that many years ago, it's a few years ago, that a large number of systems were built around these chips. Right? There is still a lot of things out there that can still use 8051s to do things. Right? You've got the tools for doing this. So again, you can go off and actually get, say, an 8051, which comes with a lot of comes with some I.O. on it, but you can actually start putting systems together and start building your own embedded systems, your own controller systems. And these controller systems doesn't have to be something that's huge or grand or anything like that at all. Simple little things like going off and turning lights on and off. Things that are actually just monitor water flow. Bits and pieces like this where you can actually use it in your house to actually see what's going on and control things. Right? Just remember, stay away from 240. It has a tendency to fry chips pretty badly. Let's move up to the next level. One of the things that is starting to become really big out there is FPGAs. Okay, FPGAs in most cases are proprietary chips with proprietary interfaces to them, protocols and other bits and pieces. My FPGA of choice doesn't come with a licensed Ethernet MAC. Okay, it gives you a set of test stuff in there so you can actually use it for a period of time or for a number of operations before it disables itself and you've got to go through another reboot. Right, it's fine for development. But if I actually want to deploy this, I'm going to have to go out and buy the license for this Ethernet core to put into my system. Open cores are trying to come up with ways of actually developing VHDL programmable logic that actually can be used in these systems. All right, so I can go up and actually build a core, get it into my FPGA of choice, make sure it works, then release it as part of open source systems and allow other people to use the same core. All right, there's a few others too, but the main one that annoys me is the Ethernet one, because it really means I have to reboot every hour. Now, there's a lot of sites out there as well that can tell you what you can do with different bits of hardware. Probably the best one for the beginning, for the basics, is Tom Walsh's site, right? openhardware.net. Okay, this is the guy that actually built the Toaster SMD oven, right? Surface mount devices. He took a toaster oven, modified in such a way as that he could actually put surface mounted chips on a PCB, feed it into his oven, and get them bonded. All right, I thought that was pretty nifty when I saw that. All right. The plans are there for you to do it yourself. Where to get all the bits and pieces, how to go about doing it. So you can actually build your own circuit boards using surface-mounted chips. Now, admittedly, it's more of the bigger grain surface-mounted chips than it is the finer grain, but it's there, and you can do it. Okay, there's other bits and points of interest that are worthwhile looking at. There's the Open Hardware Foundation. Okay, this is a non-profit corporation whose charter is to promote design and production of open source and open documentation hardware. All right, it came out of Open Graphics. There's not much there, except it's a foundation which is pushing for this sort of stuff, which is pushing to get protocols set up so that this can actually happen, that it become more open source. And you're not tied down to things like Gerber files, some of the stuff that comes out of Verilog, or very specific protocols that are used on the pick-and-place machines, or circuit board builders. Right? This is where we're trying to move to, is to actually get to the point where we're not dependent on a single point where we have to have proprietary protocols to go into these machines. You've got openhardware.org. Ah, yes, Bruce Perrins has got his openhardware.org site back. All right, a couple of years ago, he set up openhardware.org, and he tied that into the Software for the Public Interest, the SPI, not the SPI bus, which is everyone's bane, but SPI, Software for the Public Interest. Now, there was a number of things happened. I'm not 100% sure what the story is, but as of towards the end of last year, he got his openhardware.org website back again, which means with a bit of luck that we'll actually see something really good happening in there and, again, being tied back into SPI. So Bruce is probably looking for help if anyone's interested. I also seem to vaguely remember that CrossTools was something that was written by Bruce as well, but that I'm not 100% sure. Okay, a few other points. Open Collector, it's mostly a link site for other projects. The most interesting thing I found when I was researching this was this open source biotechnology section. Okay, the pros and cons of openness in research-dependent areas, specifically biotechnology and pharmaceutical companies. It's a very, very good write-up defining what this person thinks people should do in the way of pharmaceuticals and things. Like when it should be open, how they should go about doing the research for it, who should actually pay for it and things. Right? If you want to have a good feel for how openness can actually benefit a society, just in general, this is a good paper to have a really good read on. Now we get to the crunch of it. There is a website out there at the moment called Electronic Design Automation. It gives you a full set of tools that allow you to go, this is the blurb on the website, gives you a full set of tools to go out there and build your own circuit boards. Right? That's everything from doing the circuit layouts, building the PCBs, doing all the surface mount stuff on it, getting the layouts and everything right. Now, I've started putting this together. The reason this was done was that when we decided that we were actually going to put in a bid for the open hardware system, we wanted to be able to go through all the open source tools, build a system that we could actually sit here on the desk as part of the mini open hardware conference, and actually show you that it is possible to build a full circuit board, a full system from using tools that are actually out there and open source. When we got rejected, that whole project was put on hold and we left it we're going to leave until next year and see what happened next year. Which means that it's only at a certain stage. So what has happened at the moment is using my FPGA of choice, I can go off now and actually build the circuit diagram of a system that I want to actually put together and get it to the point where I can actually do circuit diagrams. Where I'm at the moment is trying to make sure that the PCB that gets generated from those circuit diagrams is a valid PCB, and I can hand those files over to a PCB manufacturer or someone who will do the pick and place for me for surface-mounted chips. Right? That's where we're up to at the moment, of actually getting it to the point where we can hand it off to someone else and say, build this for me. Right? Now, we're not in the business of actually building some of these things ourselves, like the actual PCB machine, the PCB cutter, or the pick and place machines. But there is cheap ones out there that the stage after that is to actually make sure that we can actually get one of these machines and put it in ourselves. So the protocol to control this machine is also open. Right? As yet, we haven't found one that will actually define the protocol for us. Right? But we're going to go off and actually try and sort this out in the long term. If it means that we actually have to have some serious talks to some of the companies out there to make these things, then fair enough, we'll do it. If we have to reverse engineer, then yeah, we'll do it too. What are the limitations of these tools? Well, in the case of the circuit layout itself, right, I was amazed that there was a number of variations of my FPGA choice of use was there. So all they had to do was actually drag them out of a mapping, plop them on my graphics sheet, and actually say, connect these pins up. All right, now this is FPGAs of, you know, like BGA type level, with everything that's there, all the names are in place, everything's there, it's already mapped out. What wasn't there was some of the new A to D chips I was looking at. Okay, so you've got this dichotomy, is that the stuff that's actually defined on there for you to be able to graphically go off and build a circuit board is not quite 100% there for the newer chips. But then again, this is open source. You've got a new chip, you want to use it, you do the layout for it, get it ready, give it back to the community so everyone else can use it. The tools for actually installing was dead easy. It's basically 122 meg ISO, and I've got copies around here somewhere if anyone wants to have a quick look at it. So from this ISO, I went off and installed all these tools, opened up the first part of it, started laying out my whole circuit board, got it to the point where I knew what was missing, went off and started defining those things, dragged them on and put it onto there. So you can get to the point where using open source tools, you can definitely do a circuit layout. Okay, like I said, I'm at the point now where I'm trying to do PCB layout, so we can actually get all the mapping and order routing. Now, is it in there? Yep. Okay, the PCB that comes with the EDA stuff says it actually handles 8 layers, includes an auto router. Right? That to me says, yeah, this is either going to definitely work or it's going to fail miserably. Right? Being able to do an 8-layer board is pretty good and pretty sophisticated. But at the moment, I have no reason to doubt that it won't do that. But again, that's where I'm up to at the moment, and that's where we actually kind of stopped, right? Because basically, neither of us had much time to do any more after that. Okay, other tools that comes with this development site, or this toolkit, is you can get a copy of NGSpice, a SPICE analog simulator. Everyone know what SPICE is? Okay, it's a simulation program more for doing analog than anything else. Right, so you can map up a circuit of analog circuits, say, go through and tell me what happens, shows you all the transients and all the rest that comes out of an analog circuit. There is also a graphical wrapper that'll go around this, which comes out as part of the toolkit as well. But again, I only put the things in there that kind of like I wanted to know about. The rest is, yeah, it's nice. Okay, again, there's a new cap, which is co-simulation of analog and digital circuits. Right, so again, you've got a tool that'll actually do the both for you. You've got a Gerber file viewer. Got Verilog compilation and simulation package. Now, the ones on this page, I haven't used, so I don't know if they actually work or how well they work. But they come as part of the package, and this package is now about 11 months old, the version I've got. Right, I'm not 100% sure if they're actually looking at doing a newer version soon or not. But again, all the EDA system does is grabs these packages from other people and put them into the one package that can actually be downloaded. Right, circuits are mostly done. PCB layout has been attempted, but it is a bit resource hungry. But again, what would you expect with an 8-layer board that you're trying to play around with? Right, so the next stage of this thing is what we're trying to do is actually get to the point where we can produce a set of files that can be handed to the manufacturer. Right, we want to be able to get to the point where we can actually build a full system that we can put on the desk and say, this is done using open source in one form or another or open hardware. Because don't forget, one of the things that happens is a lot of the manufacturers of hardware actually give you reference circuits. So a lot of those reference circuits can then be used to actually form the basis of what you want to do in the long term. So you can take those and actually use them as a basis for building your own circuits. Right, so a lot of the hard work from that point of view is also taken away. Right, because people are not actually going to give you a chip and a circuit system that is and a reference circuit that isn't going to work. Yeah, that's why I was sticking with the Gerbers. Yeah. Don't know. Well, if it doesn't do it now, put your hand up and do it. No, I'm only kidding. All right, so this is one of the things that I think will be in the next big push for some of the open source or some of the open communities, is being able to get to the point where you can get something from someone else which allows you to replicate stuff and keep moving it out. Now, one of the things that's come out in some of the work that I've been doing is that Isn't this embarrassing? I've forgotten the name. Anyway, there's a group out there that actually wants you, whenever you put in for a tender, to actually specify is that you're using open hardware. In other words, you have to, as part of this tender, hand over all the circuit diagrams, all the circuit boards, and how to manufacture it as well. All right, now that's starting to become a bit of a push as well, and I think that has grown out of the fact is that when you actually deliver an open source system, that you also are required to hand over all the source that went into making that system. Right, so I can see that this is going to be a bit of a push. It's something that only seems to be just starting to take off now, but again, it looks like it might be something that will be a trend in the future as well. Now, hardware is not something that I can actually build from the point of view as I cannot build a chip. So from that point of view, as I see that the hardware side of things will be less a threat to the manufacturers than what open source is to the software developers. Okay, from that point of view, as I can see, is that people will still go out there and actually produce the hardware to actually produce the chip, but it'll be up to you to take that chip and use tools and open source tools and development systems to go off and actually develop that into a viable system. Right, so I can see as a trend that more and more the actual hardware manufacturers will start releasing stuff that they can actually allow you to just go off and use yourself as well. But again, that's a trend and that's a belief on my side. So where does all this come about? Well, we had the talk this morning about Steve talking about all his robots and the fact that he actually has some there with the faces on them and stuff like that. We've got RepRap, which actually allows you to actually start duplicating some of this stuff. And about 2 years ago, I actually gave a talk on what I'd like to see happening in the future of embedded systems. And one of those trends that came out of it was talking about how robotics is going to evolve, how I'd like to see robotics evolve. And one of the things, the very last slide that I actually put up in that presentation, was a copy of Boomer and Number 6 from Battlestar Galactica. All right? So we're actually well on the way to doing that now. We've got systems that can replicate themselves. We've got things like software that's actually open source. We're producing robots that are actually starting to animate faces and do things like that. So it won't be long now, and we'll have some. Okay, is there any questions? Yep.
So I understand that a lot of research, like astronauts or space flight
security, they may have, but I hadn't heard that from NASA, and I, for the life of me, can't remember who this other one is. There's a set of cores that are open, Spark, yeah, that you can actually get. Yeah, I knew that one. It could be. Yeah, but see, there's a bit of a problem with the defense industry in that I actually worked in part of that and actually was delivering stuff to it. But I think they insist on getting that information, but from my point of view on the project I worked on, I never got the impression that I actually neither understood it, cared about it, or even verified that it actually could be built or used. Right? So from that point of view, I'm a little bit dubious about whether the people like the military actually say, yes, we want this for the reasons that it actually makes sense to want it, rather than just a check in the box. Right? And that to me is probably the worst way they could probably do it. If they actually got this stuff in and had someone sit down and actually go through it and make sure it was all there, it all worked, and it did what it said to do, then yeah, I'd be a lot happier with the military doing this sort of stuff. Right? But like I said, I mean, the project I worked on, or two projects I worked on, they really did give me the impression that all they wanted it was for a tick in the box and saying they had it. Yep? Yep. No. But actually, until I see something a bit more concrete than just saying something, again, I don't have a tendency to believe companies like that. Not offhand, no. Oh, yeah. That would be good, because the last time I worked on TI chips, really had a lot of trouble getting documentation out of them at all. And yeah. But don't forget also ATI are actually starting to release their specs and stuff as well now. Yeah, right, I'm really hoping that'll flow on from most of the graphic stuff. Yeah. Inside it, nah. Yeah, that's it. But at least it's a step forward. Well, look at it from another point of view. Is an x86 chip. I mean, there's guts in that, which you've got no idea what it's going to do, and you've got no way of actually finding out about it. Right? So, you know, there's things like that you're not going to find out. But again, see, that's actually to develop the chip itself. Right? And if I actually felt that I could build a plant that would build the chip itself, then yeah, maybe I'd be pushing on to actually having that sort of stuff open. But I don't have, you know, the billions of dollars to set up a chip manufacturing plant to actually be able to say, hey, there, that should be open. Yeah. Yeah, they won't do it, yeah. Yep. But I feel better about having patents on something that's inside a chip like that, that's actually going to be manufactured at that level, than I do out of, you know, like bloody one-click patents that, you know, you get out of some of the other software companies as well. So. You're careful.
So with regards to, I mean, it's not on the same scale.
Yep. Put it onto an FPGA, yep. And if you go about that the right way, then the fact that the FPGAs are slower probably won't mean anything if you actually start turning them into more or less multi-cores. Right? So from that point of view, if you can get a good hit on that. But again, you'd probably have to sit down and actually take a core that you think would be possible and actually put it onto the FPGA itself. But then you get back to the problem whereby my FPGA core of use is one of those ones where the actual protocol to load the actual VHDL image into the chip is a proprietary protocol. Right, so you've got issues like that to go over all sorts of this stuff. Okay. Yeah. But the issue with that is, though, the issue with that is, though, is you've got to actually have the design, the VHDL design, to actually be able to put in those sort of things. And that's where most of the problem lies. Yeah. All right, so this is what we really were going to do for open hardware. So do you think it's worthwhile pursuing this in future conferences? Good, because then we might be able to get some kind of leverage here and see what other stuff is going on. Okay, any other questions? Well, yeah, but again, I always thought open source would be further along now than what it is. Right? I thought we'd have more stuff on the desktops and stuff now than what there is. Right? And again, that's a matter of just plugging away until we actually, you know, do something serious about it. And I see the same sort of thing happen with hardware too. Oh, this day and age it is. I mean, consider that, you know, you want to really get something out the door within about 6 months. Yeah. If you've got the team that can do it, the skill of the team that can do it too, yeah. I feel offended. Yeah. Yeah, but we got. Yeah. But we've got things like, the Open Source Industry Association, which is. Yeah, trying to get it actually out there, yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
I think a few of them are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I gotta admit, I'm waiting for the fallout from the slug meeting with the Microsoft on Friday. Yes. I'm just waiting to see what comes out of that. Yeah, I don't know how many of you are on the slug mailing list, but I made a few comments, which I didn't think that was particularly a good idea, but yeah. Well, I heard one of the things that Sarinda said was they actually did one in Singapore, right? So I haven't heard of any anywhere else, right? So yeah, it'd probably be worthwhile just trying to get all of a few other slugs or flying chooser groups in other countries and see if they're actually hitting them too. But so you've got to also remember too that Australia is one of those places where people like to do a lot of beta testing, right? So from that point of view, so I could see them coming here and doing that first, just to gauge reaction before they did it anywhere else. Yeah. No. Yeah, but let's not talk about it, mate. Let's just don't worry about it. Things will happen. There was something else I was going to say too that slipped. Anyway, it doesn't matter. All right. So, any others? Anyone want to have a bitch about anything else as well? Yep. Yeah. Well, that's if some research section takes public funds to do the research, I believe that should be put back into the public domain. Right? Simple as that. Oh, that's quick before everyone else starts ducking off. One thing I wanted to say was when I was talking to Steve this morning after he finished his talk, he said he was amazed at the level of enthusiasm over what he was doing from this group of people. And he was really amazed at just how the buzz of this community seems to actually hang together as people are really interested in the tech and the way of doing things and stuff. All right, so I just thought I'd let you all know that from what he said this morning.